Melachim. Perek Kesvav, in the middle of Perek Kesvav. However, we are going to continue what we've been doing the last few weeks, and instead we will be studying the more elaborated parallel in Divrei Hayamim, okay? So, we are in Divrei Hayamim Beis, Perek Tes Zayin, the beginning of Perek Tes Zayin. It's not a list, but let's do it again. Okay, 16 from the beginning. We saw last week the story in which Asa, the righteous king of Yehuda, who was making great strides in bringing the glory of Malchus Yehuda back to its original state, and he was experiencing great divine displays of favor. Hashem kept showing him, as he kept doubling his efforts to bring the nation closer to Hashem and to up everybody's dedication, to raise the standards of the people as high as he could, he kept on seeing that responded to by Hashem, showing him extra favor, miraculous victories, very great prosperity, etc. And then, we reached the point last week where this reached a certain anticlimax. So, Baasha, the king of Israel. Okay, we won't see the pesukim inside. We'll just go through it again, what we were up to. Baasha, the king of Israel, came up to war against Asa. Asa, we already saw, had made forays into Baasha's territory to start trying to recapture the Aseret HaShvat and bring them back into the fold of Hashem's true service. Baasha now came up against Asa, and he even made a treaty with the king of Aram that he would support him. Asa panicked when he saw the forces of Baasha coming against him, and he emptied out all of the royal coffers and also the coffers of the Beis HaMikdash in order to pay off Hadad, to switch his loyalties and support him. So Hadad, the king of Aram, did that. And he came up against, he sent forces, started making problems for Baasha, and Baasha laid off and retreated. That's what we said. So let's see, actually we'll see Pasuk Hey. That's actually what we're up to. Pasuk Hey. Vayihi kishmaya Baasha, when Baasha heard that while he had laid siege to Eretz Yehuda, when he heard that meanwhile Hadad had come from the rear and was busy attacking different cities in his own kingdom, so Vayechdal Mibnoisis HaRamah, he stopped his efforts at building the siege. Vayashbeisis Malachta, he dropped the whole project, he dropped the whole campaign, he went back home. So Asa and the people of Yehuda were spared. Baasha left the whole siege system behind, the whole blockade, dropped it all, went running back home. So the Asa HaMelech Lokach es kol Yehuda. So Asa took all of Yehuda, Vayis'u es avnei harama v'seitzel asher bana Baasha, and he took down all the blockade, the whole siege, all the different systems that Baasha had set up there. Apparently it was an awful lot of material. Even by him is Geva ves Hamitzpah, and he actually built up two cities with it.
Just an opinion. Asa and Baasha both had a treaty with King Olam.
Yeah.
And what Asa was asking, he was only asking him to stay neutral.
Right.
He didn't ask him to attack Baasha.
Right.
If that had happened, do you think Hashem would have still been angry?
Yeah, yeah. We're going to see now what the problem was. Yeah, yeah. So now, Ba'esahi, it was at this time, Ba'chanani Haroya El Asa Melech Yehuda. Chanani, the Navi, came to Asa, the king of Yehuda, And he said to him, you failed the test. When you put your faith, you put your trust unto the king of Aram, instead of putting your weight on Hashem, interesting way of putting it. Therefore, the army of the king of Aram has escaped you. That's a strange thing to say. He wasn't up against the army of the king of Aram. The army of the king of Aram was kind of in the background there as a background threat. He was facing off against Basha, and he was feeling threatened by them. But now the Nafi is coming and telling him, you messed up Hashem's plan, and you let the king of Aram get away. What does this mean? Let's see. You remember, a couple of weeks ago we saw that he had his battle against the army of Ethiopia. They were a much greater army. With their chariots and their horsemen. They were a very great multitude. And when you put your trust on Hashem, He gave them over into your hand. So here it was a lesser army. Yes, you felt threatened. They were beyond your abilities, your natural abilities, but it was a lesser army. And Hashem actually had in mind to do the same for you. You would have beaten not only Basha, but even his ally Hadad of Aram, right? Both Basha and Asa were relating to Hadad of Aram as like the strong one. Everybody wanted him on his side. He said, not only did I intend for you to beat Basha, you would have beaten Hadad also in the miraculous way that you beat the Ethiopians. Because Hashem, his eyes are constantly busy looking around, surveying the land. When he sees a person who is wholehearted with Hashem, who is relying on Hashem, Hashem makes a point of drawing him closer. By what? By giving him more opportunities, more tests, / opportunities. So Hashem slowly raises him up, gives him a little bit more divine experience so as to enable him to feel a little more confident in Hashem's aid, so as to be able to take another step, etc. Niskalta alzois. You messed up here. Kime'ato yeshim chamilchama. Up till now you enjoy a supernatural state of tranquility. Now, that's it. You dropped back to the laws of nature, and you'd be going to have wars like anybody else. In other words, the point here is that Hashem had expected him, Hashem was moving him slowly, step by step. With every step of growth that he took, Hashem responded with a very great show of favor, and expecting of him to up his standards even a little more. That's the process of a relationship with Hashem. You do Hashem, especially in those days when it was completely open, when the interactions with Hashem were completely open. You do, Hashem responds in kind, now expects you to step it up a little more. It's supposed to be a process of interaction, which is going not like this, but like this. Right? And this, Hashem was setting Asa up to take another leap of faith, and another leap of faith. It hasn't explained last week yet. Normally, the rule is that you have to cooperate with the rules of nature, the Ishtablus, etc., etc. But as we started saying last week, Hashem does expect that the more you experience him in your life, don't leave him in the theoretical realm. Right? The more you experience him in your life, the more you should start factoring him in. It's like that with all kinds of things. When we talk about Ishtablus, we base our Ishtablus on our experience, right? We have things that we know we can rely on. We have things that we learn to rely on until we feel confident enough to actually place our eggs in their basket. So here, this was the expectation. Hashem said, I already showed you enough of my intervention for you to have been able to take that step and say, I feel Hashem with me. I already have felt him in my life. I know that he's there. I'm not scared. Now this really was what Asa was being faulted with. He had that hard time of letting go. Let's just say, this is often the challenge of Bitachon. it's not as stark in our case because we're not dealing with open miracles like this. But the challenge of B'tochen is our sense of security, Lamaisa, is grounded on our material frame of reference. Right? We want to feel like we're in solid ground in material terms. But this is also the tying on the Jewish people in the Midbar. And so it's the test and the challenge of the Jewish people in the Midbar. Are you able to move away from your material frame of reference, or the way things ought to work in the material world, and just completely operate with the premise that you're just operating with Hashem? And this was where Asa failed. He needed that, like we said the other week, Harav Shlomo Brevda said it about Bush Sr., right? After he had enough bombs that he knew he could to reach Gehenna, he was able to say, "We put our trust in God," when he declared war on Iraq first round. So that's good. That's good. That's pretty good for a Bush, right? But for an Asa, he should have been able to have that faith even when he did not see all those bombs. And this is where he fell. Again, fell. Did he become a Rasha? Didn't become a Rasha. Far from it. He's a great man, right? But in terms of Hashem said, "I was trying to bring you up to a higher place, until you would have hit the climax where we could mamash reunite the kingdom." You fell short just there. Tragic. So this is the message that the Navi delivered, and here again we are seeing, like we keep saying, it's always unfair to have David in the background, right? When we're looking at people's performances and measuring them up. But how does he respond? He gets his criticism from the Navi. Hanani, his name is. Vayichas Asa el Haroyeh. Asa got angry at the Navi. Vayitneu beis hamaafeches. And he put him in jail. Ki bizaf imoy. Al zoyz. Now, why did he put him in jail? Just because he delivered a disturbing message? Asa was at a level that Enoch would have been able to live with that. But the thing is that the Nevi'im in Klal Yisrael had a very unusual way of doing things in terms of their interaction with monarchs. Everybody, no matter who, no matter what, the biggest advisors, the closest advisors, no matter what, you talk to a monarch with reverence. That is basic, right? The prophets of Klal Yisrael are the one exception to the rule in history. I'm talking real monarchs, okay? The prophets of Klal Yisrael were the one exception to this rule in history. They did not speak to kings with reverence. They spoke to kings from on top, like a teacher chastising a student. This was how David HaMelech Nevi'im spoke to him, Shaul HaMelech Nevi'im spoke to him. Yes or no, he strikes the line, right? He's chaylik covered l'malchus on the one hand. On the other hand, we know that at one point he slapped him in the face, right?
That's a Goyish king as well. That's different.
That's also true, right? Right. Moshe slapped Paro. But that's right. The point that Reb Jonathan is making, that what was expected of a Jewish king was complete submission to the Navi. To the Navi. And this became more and more difficult as time went on, until the end of the Bayis Rishon, where the Mamish were completely resenting the Nevi'im, right? And they just didn't want to hear them anymore. You have to realize, it was very irritating and challenging to live with Nevi'im around. Right? You know how it works in the time of Nevi'im? You tried your best. You did an almost perfect job. Now you want a pat on the back. The Navi comes and says, "You are a good for nothing. You were always a rotten person." Why? Because you aimed for that full Shemana Esrei with Kavana, and in the second half of Simshon you started spacing out. And he said, "You mechutzef," right? So, in the earlier times, this is what perfected the Jewish people. The reason we don't have Nevi'im today is because we wouldn't tolerate them. We wouldn't know to appreciate the gift. Enough already, okay? Right? You don't want to hear it. You see the Navi coming, alright, right? The more polite people would just run away. The less polite people, they do what they did to Yirmiyah, right? So here also Asa resented the fact that the Navi spoke to him harshly. Delivering a harsh message is one thing, but he spoke in harsh tones. There was no reverence. No reverence and no deference, right? So that he got angry about. That already you shouldn't have done. And he locked him up. Because the Navi had spoken harshly to him. He didn't speak respectfully. And Asa also oppressed some of the people at that time, because there were those among the people also who were supporting the Navi. Who were supporting the Navi and who protested when Asa locked him up. Right? This is something that the lower kings did. But the higher kings are expected to be on a different level. Right? Look at the way Shaul and David responded to their Nevi'im. Right? Complete, absolute, immediately the head goes down. I have sinned. Right? Even Shaul had a harder time with it. Still spoke completely submissively. It's just that he negotiated a little. I didn't really sin until finally he also lowered his head. Right? But here, Asa resents the harsh language. In the system of Jewish halacha, there isn't a punishment called jail. But first of all, it's quite likely that they had it just for secular legal purposes. I don't mean secular law. There was no secular law. I mean just technically. You know, sometimes a drunk guy is making a lot of trouble. He doesn't deserve any Jewish punishment, al pi Torah, but you got to lock him up to keep him out of trouble for a while. They had jails just for these technical purposes. Even in halacha, there were situations. You had to lock a person up until he could be tried. So they had jails as a technicality. It just wasn't really a part of the punishment system. So Yirmiyahu also was put in jail. There were jails. There were just more of a technicality than a punishment system. People weren't sentenced to X amount of years in jail.
There's jail in the Torah.
What's that?
There's the Mishmar for the guy to the stone.
That's right. It's a holding pen. A holding pen. If you're ready in the Torah, they locked up the guy until they could try him. They did have one punishment that actually involved the jail, but that was a very short term. It was a three-day term. When the people who transgressed Mises Besdin a few times without Hasra, when they got the idea of the fact that this guy is transgressing something that warrants a death penalty, just he knows how to get around the warning, so Besdin said, "You're right, we can't kill you. We'll just close you in a closet for 2-3 days. And then they would feed him. It was up to him if he wanted to eat it or not. They would feed him, they fed him dry barley with, that would just make him pop. Yeah. So, there were jail sentences, but they were kept very short. There was no such thing as a week. Okay. I don't know if anything, maybe it was just a way of responding in anger. Vehine. So that's the unfortunate end of the story of Asa. The story of Asa is not an unfortunate story. The story of Asa is a very great success story. He brought the Jewish people up to their level very much. Just it was tragic in the sense of, could have gone all the way. Hashem had it set up to go all the way, and it didn't. V'hinei divrei Asa rishonim v'achronim. And now the affairs of Asa, the earlier affairs, the later affairs. He had a long, very glorious reign. They are recorded in the records of the kings of Yehuda and Yisrael. And Asa got sick in the 39th year of his king of his reign. Beraglav got sick in his legs. Ad lemalo chalyoy. There's some sort of sickness in his legs, a disease in his legs that then spread up to the rest of his body. Something like that, yeah. And again, gam bechalyoy leidoras es Hashem kibaroifim. Even when he was sick, also when he was sick, he did not seek out Hashem. Instead, he sought out the doctors. A bit of a surprising statement.
Doesn't have to.
What's that?
Doesn't have to
what?
Seek out Hashem.
Why?
Because he didn't ask for that.
So let's see. So, this also, Lemaisa, is being stated as a certain tainan. to abstain is saying, well, I'm only supposed to, it says, I'm not going to be able to do it, right? You're thinking of the Gemara Mavakama. What's that? You're allowed to, that's what doctors are there for. So first of all, again, it's that fine line of, where is your mind? Even us, when we go to a doctor, we're expected to go to the doctor not with the sense of, my welfare lies in this man's hand, but with the sense of, Hashem is going to decide, and maybe I should try to figure out what might tip Hashem's decision in one direction or the other. Hashem expects me to go through the natural motions, and therefore I'm going to the doctor. That's, by the way, it's very important to realize that we talk about hishtadlus and bitachon. Right? People ask, where is the place for hishtadlus, where is the place for bitachon? It's a problematic question. The question is as a problematic premise. Like there's two realms. There's the realm of hishtadlus and the realm of bitachon. When you have what to do, do it. If you got no other choice, bring Hashem into the picture, right? So it not just sounds, it is, right? That's not the pshat. The idea is that, yes, Hashem set up the world to run according to the natural system because that's the way He wants it to run, and He wants you to cooperate with that system. But the challenge is to work your bitachon into your ishtablis. It's not that, Baruch Hashem, now I'm on. Like, so this is Asa's mistake earlier also. Person wants the sense that he's like on solid ground where my fate is in my hands. I go about things in a natural way. It's predictable. I know what I'm dealing with. Rather than say, I'm just hanging myself in Hashem's hands. But that's not what the sense should be. That's not what the sense should be. The sense should be, I am in Hashem's hands. There are certain things He expects me to do, so I'm going through the motions. And therefore, it's a very fine line. Because the person with the proper bitachon and the person without the proper bitachon will make the same appointment for the same doctor. Right? The difference is, where are their minds? One of them is, I hope the doctor gets the right diagnosis. Oh boy, my whole future is depending on this appointment, etc., etc. Right? This guy feels that this doctor's abilities are what's going to make it or break it. Then the other one is in a completely different mindset. He's in the mindset of, Hashem brought this upon me. I have to figure out why. I have to figure out what I should do to change it. And among the requirements that He expects me to do is to go through the natural means of approaching the doctor. So that's really number one. Is the point is that he went straight for the doctors again. This is really what us is being faulted with repeatedly. That sense of not being able to let go of my feeling of material stability. That's really, this is my solid ground. Be able to get off that solid ground and move into Hashem's boat. Really, it's the other way around. Okay. So, but the truth is, it goes a step more than that. The Ramban talks about this. In these times, when there were Nevi'im, actually, a person shouldn't have been going to a doctor at all. That's what the Ramban says. He says, the way the Ramban puts it is, what place does a doctor have in the home of a servant of Hashem? And the days of what place does a doctor have in the home of a servant of Hashem? The Ramban says, in the time when they were Nevi'im, you were able to go straight for the root of the problem. You went to a Navi, and you said to the Navi, I need a throat culture. My throat is hurting, right? And the Navi gave you a good examination, and he said, diagnosis, Lashon Hara, right? So what's the prescription? 2 halachas of chafetz chaim a day for 2 weeks. Right? And then you were feeling better. That was how it worked. You went to the Navi. The Navi told you what the cause of the problem was. The Navi provided the remedy. And that was how it worked. And in fact, Rav Moshe Levitt Vali says here, he says in those days, I don't know, Jews who went to doctors probably just killed them. It's he said today also. Right? I don't know if there's an alternative. We have no choice but to do that. But he said, doctors probably just killed them. So this was the time. It was once again the idea being that he was having a hard time getting off of what he considered solid ground. Solid ground is the world of natural workings. As much as Hashem was showing him his involvement in his life, he was never able to really let go. I know Hashem is here. Let me still hold on to the material control that I have. Vayishkav Asa im Avoysov. Asa was laid to rest with his forefathers. Vayamas b'shnas avoyim v'achas l'molchot. He died in the 41st year of his reign. 41 years, that's a long reign. What's that? Shlomo was 40 years. Vayikberu b'kivroisav asher ko'aloi b'ir David. They buried him in the grave that he had dug for himself in the city of David. Vayishkivu b'mishkov. And they lay him down in the resting place. Ashamile Visamim Vizunim Mirukachim Mimikachas Maisim. That he had filled with all kinds of. Happens to that, he's smelling what seems to smell like Hadas right now. Anybody just noticed that? There seems to be some good smell in the air. Oh, it does. Because it looks up perfectly with the Pasuk right now. Actually, as I've gone to this Pasuk, I suddenly started smelling things. I wondered if I was smelling the Pasuk.
Is it seven?
Is it brought on them?
It doesn't look like it. Is it natural?
Lavender oil.
Oh. We should be saying a bracha. Or it needed to be something, right?
It is nice. So
I'm learning. Yeah. Okay, well, make the bracha. Yeah. Look at that. I just thought it was like, it's a ruach ha-kodesh. Got to ring the bracha. All of a sudden, I smell it in the air. Okay. Oh, live demonstration. Okay. That's it. So, Hayashkivu b'mishkov, they lay him down in his resting place. Hashamile b'samim v'zunim, that he had filled with all kinds of spices and aromatic herbs. Mirukachin b'mirkachas maisa, that had been not just stam natural herbs, but herbs that these whole aromatic concoctions that had been put together professionally. His grave was like a whiff of something very exotic. Vayinsuf, what's that? I was like, Ktoris itself they wouldn't have been allowed to use, right? But yeah, something along those lines. Apparently they really had professional recipes of aroma. They made a very big affair out of his death. They burnt a very, very great fire. This was the we're familiar with the custom. When kings died, they would make a big bonfire in their honor. They would throw in many of his personal articles and things like that. So they made even in terms of kings, they made an extremely big bonfire. In other words, they're just being reminded. You know, we go through the Navi, it's criticizing Asa. For the Jewish people, this was the end of a very great and glorious Tkufa. This was a man who went down as one of the great kings of Klal Yisrael, and this is reflected in the big, big affair that they made out of his funeral. Rabbi Moshe David Vali asks, this idea of filling the grave with all kinds of spices, what was that about? What was that about?
It's unique, right?
It's unique. We don't find
only,
it.
Only for him.
Oh, that's right. So we don't find anybody else. The greater kings before, nobody came up with the... Why was he the one who did this?
Gangrene.
Oh, I hear. It might have been a little more foul. That's interesting. I hear that. I hear. I have done it for that purpose. I hear. That's interesting. That's an interesting suggestion. I hear. So Rav Moshe David Vali, in his way, makes it quite spiritual. He says that there were two things going on here at the same time. The pasuk is meant to be understood at face value and not at face value. He says, on one level, what the pasuk is referring to is to all of the ma'asim tovim that he had done throughout his life, both kind of like coming back and saying, we just finished criticizing him at the end of his life, right? But Lamaisa, when they laid him to rest, they laid him to rest in a resting place that was full, packed with all kinds of beautifully aromatic deeds that he had been filling with his whole life. But he also says, no, it's also to be taken literally, that he actually went ahead and made a point of creating this whole aromatic aura around his grave. For the purpose of, this was part of his career of pushing the Jewish people to greater heights. He wanted to make Olam Haba something real to them. And this was his way of doing it. They took the dead body, they laid it down to rest, and as the grave opens, look what you smell. Look what you smell. Like people, as the grave opened, they were hit by that aromatic smell of Gan Eden. He said that was his last, this was his last step of chizik, of tiru, for Klal Yisrael. Right? This demonstration of Olam Haba, trying to make it sensory to them. Okay. We move over to Sefer Malachim. Remember that? Sefer Malachim. Continuing, back where we just left off. We're in Perek Tesvav, Pasuk Chafei. Perek Tesvav, Pasuk Chafei. From Divrei Hayamim. Divrei Hayamim. We were just doing Divrei Hayamim now because there were some important incidents to study, and Malachim, they're presented very sparsely in Divrei Hayamim. They were elaborated on more. Now we're moving back to Malachim. So we just finished describing the period of Asa in Malchus Yehuda, in the kingdom of Yehuda. Now we're moving back over to the kingdom of Israel. We're actually moving a little bit back in time because, you know, the Navi talks about the reign of one whole king, and then we move back over to where we were up to the Malchus. So we're actually moving a little bit back in time. Last we saw Malchus Yisrael was the death of Yeravam. Now, when we talked about Asa, we already moved ahead of there because we were talking about Basha, who had overthrown his family. But we're moving back to go back to the history of the Malchus of Yisrael, the kingdom of Yisrael. And here I'm going to try to move quickly. I want to cover ground now because I'm just pretty much moving through the follies of the kings of Israel at this time until things are going to start happening. Nadav ben Yeravam molach al Yisrael. Nadav, the son of Yeravam, took the throne over Yisrael, over the 10 tribes. Bishna shtayim la'asa melech Yehud. In year 2, right, we just finished the 41st year of his reign. You're backing up to year number 2 of Asa, the king of Yehuda. And he ruled over Klal Yisrael for 2 years. And he continued with the tradition of his father. He did what was wrong in the eyes of Hashem. He followed the example of his father. And he kept up all the sins that his father was messing, ruining Klal Yisrael with, the calves, etc. And as we saw, Achia Shiloni had already delivered the curse against the family of Yeravam. And here it's going to come to pass. Basha ben Achia, this is not son of Achia Shiloni, it's a different Achia. Basha ben Achia of Yisachar plotted against him by Ateu Basha beGibson Ashel Aplishtim, and Basha smote Nadav in Gibson, which was in the territory of the Plishtim. But Nadav called Yisrael Tzorim al Gibson. Nadav, it was at a time when Nadav and the Jewish people were besieging Gibson. The Navi points this out just to tell us that, yeah, the fall came when he thought that he was at his high point. You know, he was already moving on to lay sieges against other cities. He felt like he was in a good position. He's ready to expand his kingdom. It was then that the curse of Hashem hit, and he was assassinated while he was busy in the campaign against a different nation. Basha smote him in the 3rd year of Asa Melech Yehuda. And he took the throne instead of him, and he was starting into what's going to turn into a regular pattern, the Malchus Yisrael of a king or two, maybe three, and then someone else comes, wipes him out, takes over a generation or two or three. Jews assassinating Jews. Yeah. Basically, by taking the throne to Malchus Yehuda, what you're basically doing is laying down a death sentence for your son or grandson. Right? So, no, this is going on in the kingdom of Israel. And when he took the throne, Hika is called Beis Yeravam. This was also standard procedure for a king, for someone who was overthrowing another king. Had learned well the ways of the going around them, right? He completely wiped out the house of Yeravam. Like he shall call Nishama li Yeravam. He did not leave any living soul in the family of Yeravam. Had Yishmida. He completely wiped them out. What's that?
He was supposed to.
It was supposed to happen. Let's see. Kidva Hashem asher diber biad avdo yachia shiloim. It was as Hashem had delivered the message in the hand of his servant Achia Shiloim. So Reb Stein is pointing out, it seems, that Basha simply carried out the will of Hashem. Yisachar. What's that?
His motive wasn't exactly altruistic.
Exactly, right? It was decreed on Yeravam to die. But why did Basha do it? If he was coming as a zealous representative of Hashem, he'd be a righteous man. But was that the case? Well, that remains to be seen in how is his reign going to look, right? So let's see. Whatever it is, yes, Yeravam's family was wiped out. Al chatos Yeravam asher chata, because of the sins that Yeravam had did. V'asher hechias Yisrael, and even more so for the pitfalls that he had done against Klal Yisrael. Bekasa shehichias es Hashem alikei Yisrael. For everything with which he angered Hashem alikei Yisrael, now his family was wiped out. V'yaseh divrei Nadav, v'kol asher asa, all of Nadav's other affairs, whatever it is he did in his couple of years of reign, they are recorded in the records of the kings of Israel. And now Basha is the new king of Israel. Umilchama hoisa bein Asa or bein Basha melech Israel kol yemeh. Now, when Basha took the throne, so there was warfare between Basha and Asa all throughout their parallel reign. We already saw this discussed earlier.
But this didn't begin now.
What's that?
I mean, here Basha's in his first year and Asa's in his third year or something, and now they're going to fight the whole time. Well, before there was no fighting until near the end of Asa's reign.
Well, what we saw earlier in Divrei Hayamim was that Basha never threatened Asa until the end of his reign.
Right.
But Asa was busy making tzaras for Basha the whole time. Right? If you remember, we actually saw that. He had actually invaded different territories. He had started recapturing the territory of the 10 tribes. And on the contrary, that is exactly the point that the Mefarshim make here. Naturally, it shouldn't have been so. Basha and Asa shouldn't have been enemies. Yeravam was the family, was the house that had rebelled against David. Basha came and got rid of Yeravam. Him and Asa should have been pals. But no, the Mefarshim say these hostilities came from Asa's end. They came from Asa's end. It didn't draw Asa close to him because Basha continued in the sinful ways of Yeravam. And therefore Asa said, as far as I'm concerned, he's just as much of an enemy as Yeravam was. I'm not any closer to him than to Yeravam. I don't care that he wiped out my enemy. Lamaisa, he's still an enemy of Hashem and therefore he's my enemy. And this was the reason for the hostilities that went on all throughout their reign. And on the contrary, Asa kept on picking on Basha all throughout the time that he was being shown favor, right? Until the end where it reversed and messed up. Now, Bishna Shalosh La Asa Melech Yehuda, and year number 3 of Asa, the king of Yehuda, Malach Basha ben Achia al Kol Yisrael, Betirza, Basha ben Achia ruled over Yisrael in Tirza during this period. Tirza was the capital. You see also just the instability in the 10 tribes. The capital keeps bouncing around from different places. Right now, Tirza is the capital of the 10 tribes. Esrimar Bashana, he reigned for 24 years. Now, as we said, was he justified in murdering the house of Yeravam? So, had he made changes, he would be. But, Vayas Hora Be'ina Hashem, he did what was wrong in the eyes of Hashem. Vayelech Bederech Yeravam, and he just simply went straight along in that same path of Yeravam. He continued the pattern of putting all of Klal Yisrael, sinking all of Klal Yisrael into sin. So we move on to Perek Tezayin. Vayehi dvar Hashem el Yehu ben Chanani al Basha lemor. So the word of Hashem came to Yehu ben Chanani about Basha, saying, what's that?
Same guy?
Earlier was Chanani. This is presumably his son.
Right, yeah. Right. It's the son of the same guy.
I would guess. Yan, there's a klal that when it says about another, so-and-so, ben so-and-so, means that also the father was another. Like it never says Eliyahu's father's name, for example. Not all the Nevi'im are mentioned with their father's name. Yan asher hari moisicha min ha'ofa. So this is the message that came to Yehu about Basha. Yehu is another, yeah. It was earlier. It's already a number of years later. So, Yahan Hashem Hari Moisicha Min Ha'afa, because I raised you up from the dirt, V'etencha Nogid Al Am Yisrael, and I made you a king over my nation Yisrael, V'atelech B'derech Yeravam, and you just followed the path of Yeravam, V'atachti Es Am Yisrael, and you sunk my nation Yisrael into sin, V'achiseini B'chatoisam, to anger me with their sins. I will sweep out the house of Basha. You're not going to fare any better than Yeravam ben Nevat. Your house is going to go to in the same direction. More specifically, all of Basha's dead in town will be eaten by dogs. Everyone in the family is going to wipe out. Those in the town, their bodies will be eaten by dogs. Those in the fields, their bodies will be eaten by the birds. And all the rest of Basha's affair, everything he did, his might, they are all recorded in the records of the kings of Israel. Okay? Ayishkav Basha in Mavoi. So this is interesting. There's this pattern of Hashem letting it move on to the second generation before cashing in, if we'll put it that way. Basha was laid to rest with his fathers. Vayikover b'tirtza, he was buried in Tirtza. Vayimloich Ela b'noi tachta. And his son Ela took the throne instead of him. Well, let's see. Coming up. Yeah. The Gambi Ad Yehu ben Chanani Hanavi. So now again came this prophecy, meaning there had been a prophecy already in the days of Basha, I'm going to wipe out this family. But Hashem took it slowly. Hashem is patient. Hashem let him move into the next generation. But then this Ela is continuing, even having heard the admonitions of the Navi, he continued in the path of his father Basha. So now again came the final message in the hand of Yehu ben Chanani, Vahashem Hoya al Basha al Beisai. The word of Hashem came again against Basha and his household. For all the evil that he had done in the eyes of Hashem, Lach Yisai b'maase yodav, anger him with all of his deeds, V'yais k'veis Yeravam, making himself identical to the house of Yeravam. Now that we've reached this point, another charge is being leveled against Basha. Now, Basha is also being blamed for killing Yeravam. Why? Originally, he said, one minute, maybe his killing of Yeravam was justified. If he was going to improve things, it was right in killing Yeravam. But now, that he didn't make any improvements, we see that there was no pious intent in killing Yeravam. He was just a plain murderer. And therefore now, we're going to throw the book at him for Yeravam's death as well. So, Bishnas Etzer Mishesh Shana La Asa Melech Yehuda, in the 26th year of Asa Melech Yehuda, Malach Ela Ben Bashal Yisrael Betirta Shnasayim, right? We're starting to see this is a pattern, right? Ela, the son of Basha, ruled over Yisrael in Tirta for 2 years. And then once again, like Shalav Avdoi Zimri, his servant Zimri conspired against him. Sar Machati Sarechev, the chariots, that was the cavalry, right, were divided into two divisions, and he was the commander of one of the two divisions. So this commander plotted against Ela while he was in Tirta. He was dead drunk at the time. He was in the home of Arza. Arza was the man in charge of the palace affairs in Tirta. So Zimri came, he found Ela dead drunk, he smote him, he killed him. Vishnas Esen Visheva Le Asa Melech Yehuda, in the 27th year of Asa, Vayim Lash Tacha, and he ruled in his stead. Vayehi Ben Malcha, and now, once again, the pattern is repeated. When he took the throne, Kishivta Al Kisai, as he took the throne, Hika is Kol Beis Basha, he wiped out the whole house of Basha, right? It's like taking out the garbage one time after the other. That's basically what's going on here, right? But he shall lay mashtim bekir. He didn't leave him as much as a dog that urinates against the wall. But Goyalov Re'ehu, not only did he wipe out Basha, Zimri did an even better job at doing it the way it's done in the world around. He wiped out, you know, the big purges. He wiped out all of his relatives, any friends he might have had. Big purges, Stalin style, right? So Zimri was given a very specific purpose, which he went about energetically, and it wasn't a good idea to go about it so energetically. He was given a job. He didn't realize that that is basically his life expectancy. Kill the house of Basha, and then I'm done with you. He went about it energetically, he didn't lose any time. Within 1 week, he got this all done. He wiped out the whole house of Basha, as Hashem had spoken. Asher diba el Basha, everything he had spoken against Basha in the hand through Yehu Hanavi. To finish the next Tzupsukim, El Kol Chateis Basha V'Chateis Eila Bnoi, this was retribution for all the sins of Basha and Eila his son. Asher Chatu V'Asher Echtiu Es Yisrael, they had sinned and sunk in Klai Yisrael into sin. V'Achnis Es Hashem Elikei Yisrael Ba'Avle, to anger Hashem with all of their nonsense. The Yesei Divrei Ela, the Chol Asher Asa, and all the rest of Ela's affairs, Haleim Suvim Al Sefer Divrei Hayamim L'Malchei Yisrael, they are recorded on the records of Malchei Yisrael. Soon, we'll see this dismal pattern is going to start. Things will start happening. Oh no, just his own. He's got a week thing, right? A week. Yeah, that's your class, thank you.